Begin the current tab in Seftas Papa Kama Daf Lamed Ches. Begin on the second line down for the tab of the Amid, where the Gemara continues explaining our Mishnah of the previous daf. And that is, the Mishnah spoke about two exceptions to the basic halacha of Shor Shenagach, which is because the pasuk says in Shemais Chafal Lamed Hey, it says Chiyigov Shor Ish Eshrei Re'ehu V'Meis. It talks about the halacha of Shor Tam regarding the first three times that it pays Chatzin Ezek. Now, the wording of the pasuk is that it's going to be the ox of a person that's going to gore the shoyer, the ox of Re'ehu, of his friend, which the first half of the Mishnah spoke about, that accepts, and that says that it's going to be different regarding Shershel Hektish, because Hektish is not Re'ehu, it's not your friend, it's Hashem. Now, the Mishnah then said a second halacha that's an exception to this halacha of Re'ehu, which the Mishnah said, Shershel Yisrael, Shonagu Shershel Kenani Potter. The ox of a Jew gores the ox of a non-Jew is going to be exempt. Whereas, if the non-Jew gores the ox of a Jew, then actually Bein Tam Bein Mud is going to be Chayiv Nezik Shal. Now, it's on this halacha that the Gemara asked Amri, they said as follows. Meman Avshach. Either way you look at it, it's hard to understand this halacha. Ire'ehu Davka, if it's exacting the wording in the Torah that says it's only if it gores the ox of his friend, which tells us that it only relates to another Jew, not to Hekdesh, and neither to a non-Jew. Now, if that's the case, the Kenani ki nagach the Yisrael nami lifter, then even a non-Jew who gores a Jew's ox should also be exempt, just like we said regarding the halacha of Hekdesh, that it's either way, that it doesn't relate to halacha, whether a Hedyit goring Hekdesh or Hekdesh goring Hedyit. We said that Re'ehu is dafka, according to Tanakh of the Tana of our Mishnah, and therefore either one that gores the other one is going to be Potter, because halacha only applies for Shor Shenagach regarding Re'ehu. That's the case, so we understand why the Shor of Yisrael gores the Shor of Kenani that is Pater, but then why did the Mishnah say that when the non-Jew's ox gores the Jew's ox, he's going to have to pay Nezek Shalom, he should be totally exempt, just like when the Jew gores his. And Ve'i lav davka, and if it's imprecise, the wording in the Torah, it's not exacting to say that it's only Re'eyu, and the halacha of Shor Shenagach would include a non-Jew. And that's why when the non-Jew's ox gores the Jew's ox, he's liable. Well, then I filled the Yisrael, ki nagach the Kenani nechayv. Then even when the Jew's ox scores, the non-Jew's ox should also be liable. Why is there this difference, the discrepancy between the Jews goring the non-Jews and the non-Jews goring the Jews? So that the Gemara says that in truth, the halacha is that it does apply. Now, but Amr Bavo says, so why is it that when the Jew's ox gores the non-Jews, then he's going to be exempt? So Amar Kra, because the pasuk says in Chavakuk, it says, Amad v'yemoydid arts. Hashem stood and he evaluated the land. Ra, he saw v'yatir goyim, and he permitted, he opened up the nations of the world. So what does that mean? So the interpretation is, says, Rebavo, ra'a sheva mitzvah shekibul aleim b'nei noach. Hashem saw the seven Noahide laws, the seven sheva mitzvah b'nei noach that the sons of Noach accepted upon themselves, meaning all the nations of the world. Because it's B'nai Noach, because he's the only one that survived the flood, and all the people of the world come from Noach. Kimish Leikaima, once he saw that, however, that they didn't fulfill it, Amad Vehitr Mamoin Liestral, he got up, so to speak, Hashem, and he permitted their monies to the Jewish people. And that's why there's this opposite ends. When the Jew gores the non-Jews, he's totally exempt. Whereas when the non-Jew gores the Jew, he's going to be liable, Nezik Shalom. Because in regards to the Jewish people, their money is permitted as a penalty for the fact that they accepted the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach and didn't fulfill them. Rabbi Yochanan Mahachi brings a different source. A pasuk in Devarim says, Hifia Mehar Paran, which the literal translation of the pasuk is talking about, that Hashem went to all the nations of the world, none of them wanted to accept it. So then he appeared from Har Paran when he went to the Yishmael, and then he came to Har Sinai, and the Jewish people finally accepted the Torah. But the interpretation, the Midrashic interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan says is, Mi Paran, from Paran, Hifia Memonim Li Yisrael. He then uncovered and permitted their money of all the nations of the world to the Jewish people. So the interpretation of the pasuk is, Hifia, he revealed their monies, and that is, he permitted them, Mi Paran, when he went around and to bring the Torah to all the nations who didn't want it, and as a penalty for that, he permitted their monies to the Jewish people who did accept the Torah. Says the Gemara Tanya Mahachi, similar in the Braisa, this halacha with these sources, Shor shel Yisrael shenagach Shor shel Kenani is pater. The ox of a Jew that gores the ox of a non-Jew, he's exempt. Shor shel Kenani shenagach Shor shel Yisrael, but the ox of a non-Jew that gores the ox of a Jew, bein tam bein mu'id mishalom nezek shalom. So whether it's the first times or the after three times, the ox is going to be liable right away, nezek shalom. Shnemlik says in the pasuk, why is this polarization? course, Amad v'yimoydid aretz, Hashem stood and he valued the land. Rav v'yatr goyim, he saw and he permitted the monies of the nations of the world. V'omer in another pasuk, which these are the two Amirom that brought these two pesukim, here the Tana of this brisa brings both pesukim, haifia mehar paran, that he went and he revealed their monies and permitted them from coming from Har Paran where they refused to accept the Torah. So the Gemara asks, Maiva Omer, why is the Tana of this brisa bring the second pasuk too? So that the Gemara says, because of Echitem, and if you're going to say, Hai Omad v'yemoydid aretz, that the first source that the Tana brings, you would think maybe you would need it for different midrashic interpretations, like Rav Masna says it, or like Rav Yisiv says it. So that's why Tashema, that's why the Tana of the Bais says, come in here, I'll bring you a second pasuk, Haifim Mahar Paran, which mi Paran Haifim Imanil Yisrael, that from Paran, that fact that they refused the Torah, he revealed and permitted their monies to the Jewish people, and that's why when the Jewish person gores, the non-Jew is going to be exempt, and the non-Jew gores is going to be chayiv nezik shalom. So the Gemara asks, my Rav Masna, so what are these two different interpretations that the Tana of Braisa said you could explain that first pasuk not as permitting their monies, but rather for different interpretations, one of Rav Masna, one of Yosef, so what's the midrashic interpretation that you could say as Rav Masna says it? So the Gemara says to Rav Masna, like Rav Masna says, quoting this pasuk, Amad v'yimayid aretz, that he stood and he evaluated the land, Ra, v'chulu, he saw, and etc. So, Ma Ra, says Rav Masna, what did Hashem see? Ra, sheva mitzvah, shenetztavu alein b'nei noich v'lekaimim, same idea. He saw that their transgression was that they accepted the seven laws and they didn't fulfill it. Amad v'higlo isam alad masam. So he gives a different interpretation. That's why it wouldn't be able to be used for this halacha of permitting their monies, and therefore to explain the halacha of our Mishnah. Rather, Hashem got up and he exiled them from their land, which Rashi brings, like you see Pesukim in Devarim, Parag Beis, Kaftarim Hayutzim Mekaftar, or Sar Yeshve HaChayim, where the nations of the world got exiled from their lands. That was because of their not fulfilling the Sheva Mitzvah B'Neinoich. Now the Gemara explains, Umay Mashma Dehai Vayatr Lishna Da'aglu Yehu. This is Rav Nassim is explaining the pasuk of Vayatr Goyim. Ra, he saw that they didn't fulfill the Sheva Mitzvah B'Neinoich, and Vayatr Goyim. So we do see from the word Vayatr that's a terminology of Gullus, of exile. So he explains, Ksiv Hacha Vayatr Goyim. Here it says the terminology Vayatr Goyim. Ksiv Hasim, it says a pasuk in Vayikra, which talks about the types of shratzim that are permitted to be eaten. It says, Ach ezot teichlu mikol sheretz ha'if. But from this, you're allowed to eat from the creepy crawly types of birds, ha'hoylech al-arba, that go on four, ashulei k'raim ma'al-raglim, that has other legs that are above its feet, which, what is it used for it? Lanatr behen al-aretz, which is the same word vayatr, same sharish lanatr, and what is umetargim? The targim, the Aramaic translation of this is lekavtzabayin al-ara. What does it use those legs in front of its four legs for? It uses it to jump on the ground like grasshoppers. It uses it to jump. So you see that the terminology of nater is kafitz, which means to jump, which means to be displaced from, to go from one place to another one. That's exactly what exile is. Therefore, you could say that vayatr goyim is the terminology of jumping, of being moved from one place to another, which is what exile was. So again, that would be a different interpretation than first pasuk. That's according to Rav Masna. Madu Rav Yosef. What's the other midrashic interpretation of Rav Yosef? Therefore, that also would be used to explain something else, not permitting their monies. Dam Rav Yosef, like Rav Yosef says, again quoting the same pasuk, Amad v'yemaydid aretz. He stood and he evaluated the land. Ra v'chul Hashem saw and etc. So Ma Ra, what do you see? Same thing. Ra shev mitzvah shekibla alein b'nei noach lekaimim. He saw the seven Noahide laws that they accepted and they didn't fulfill it. So Amad v'hetirin lahem. Again, a different interpretation. So he went, he stood up, and he permitted them that you don't have to keep the Sheva Mitzvah B'Neinoich. He permitted it to them. So the Gemara asks, is Gurei Asker? What, you think that they're gaining now? Imkain, if so, Metzinu Chayti Nisker, it would turn out that a sinner would gain. Why would Hashem do that? Hashem wants certain things to be fulfilled, so because they accept it and they're not fulfilling, Hashem said, okay, you don't have to do it anymore. Why would he want a sinner to gain now that they get off scot-free? So Amma Mabri Davan, he explains, Leiman, though, what it means to say is, Shafilim Akaimanoisan, that even if now the nations of the world fulfill the seven Noahide laws, Ein Makabna Lein Sacher, they do not receive reward for it because they're not commanded anymore. Of course, but however, he didn't exempt them from penalties, from punishments. If they don't fulfill it, they will be punished because they are commanded in it. What we mean when we say they're not commanded is that even if they go ahead and fulfill it now, they're not going to, however, receive rewards for it, which is what's fitting when you have a commandment and you fulfill it. Now the Gemara says, "Veloy, and they what? You tell me that they don't receive rewards for fulfilling the seven mitzvot of Neinach?" But Vatanu and Abraisa or Meir, I mean, he says, "Minayin, from where do we know? Shafil nachri va'isik b'Taira, that even a non-Jew that toils in Taira, shehu kohen gadol, that he's as great as the high priest as the kohen gadol." Tamalamah says Rameh, because the Pasuk says in Mayikra, Asher Yasa Isam Adam Bechaibem, that a person should do these mitzvahs and he will live in them. Now says Rameh, Kahanim Velevim Yisraelim Loinem, but the Pasuk doesn't say Jewish people, doesn't say Kahanim Levim Yisraelim, Ela Adam, if a person, any person, not even a Jew, Halamadu that comes to teach, Shafila Nachriva Isik Batayra, that even a non Jew who toils in Torah, Harei Kukan Gadol, is as great as the high priest. So therefore the question is, you see that from Rameh's drasha, that a non-Jew does receive a reward for fulfilling the mitzvahs that he has. So how can you say that now they don't receive reward anymore? So how many they said, Eimaka malein schar kemitzvah v'aisa. Yes, they receive reward. They just don't receive reward as someone that was commanded and did it. Ela kemisha eina mitzvah v'aisa. Rather, their reward that they do, as Rameh said they get for fulfilling mitzvahs, is only like someone that's not commanded and does it anyway. The Amr B'Chanin, like Chanin says, that there is a difference. Gadol HaMitzvah V'Aisa, greater is someone that is commanded and does it, Yesem Misha in Mitzvah V'Aisa, than someone that's not commanded and does it. Because when you're commanded, you have a Yitzhahar, you have, someone tells you to do something, oh, I'm not doing it anymore. You're telling me what to do? Therefore, there's a greater reward from Mitzvah V'Aisa than in Mitzvah V'Aisa. So yes, they do receive reward. However, it's like on the lower level of someone that's not commanded and does it, but of course they are commanded, and if they don't do it, they are going to get punishments. It's just that Hashem was matter to them, meaning to say that they lost the ability of having the great reward of a mitzvah v'aisa. So therefore, those are the two different interpretations of a Masna and Rabbi Yosef, how you could explain this pasuk, not of one of being matter their mamon, and hence, that's why the Tana and the Braisa brought the other pasuk as a source for this halacha of the discrepancy of Sharshan of Shar Yisrael, Shanagach Shar Shakanani, which is exempt, and Shakanani Shanagach Shar Yisrael is going to be Chayiv Nezik Shalom. Now, relating to this halacha, the Gemara brings the following brayse. The Tan Rabban, Ukvar Sholcha Malchus Raimi, the Roman government had already sent Shnei Sar Diyotis Eitzel Chachmei Yisrael, two officers to the sages of the Jewish people, and they said, Lamdunu Taraschem, teach us your Torah. So Karu, Vishanu, Vishalshu. So they read, they reviewed a second time and a third time, and they learned the Torah. Now Bishas Petiras and Amalhem, when these two officers were leaving, they said to the Jewish sages as follows. Dikdaknu b'chol Tairaschem v'emesu. We were meticulous and we analyzed your whole entire Torah, and it's true. Chutz midavazeh shatmayim, except for this one halacha that you say, which is the halacha of our, that we were discussing here from our Mishnah, which is Shor Shel Yisrael Shenugach Shor Shel Kanani Pater. You say that if a Jew's ox gores a non-Jew's ox, he's exempt. Shakanani shenogach shor shel Yisrael, but you say that if a non-Jew's ox gores a Jew's ox, bein tam bein mud mesham nezik shalom, whether it's the first times or whether it's already done it three times, it's always going to be chayim nezik shalom. On that, the officer said, mimalav shach, either way you look at it, we don't understand this halacha. Ire eyudavka, if you say that the wording of the Torah when it talks about shor shel nagach is precise, that it pertains only to re'ehu, to another fellow Jew, lifted, and even when a non-Jew's ox scores, the Jew's ox should be exempt. And if it's not precise, then even when the Jew's ox scores the non-Jew's ox, he should be liable. Now, as Rashi points out, the Jewish sages did not tell these officers the real reason, which is, as we just brought in the previous Gemara, that the non-Jew's money is considered a hefker to the Jewish people, from one of those two psukim, because obviously the danger that that would pertain if that would get out to the non-Jews, that the Jews considered their money to be hefker. Now, however, the officer said, however, this idea, this one area of challenge of this halacha, this discrepancy that you have, we won't tell that to the government. Now, the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, Shrivele Brata. He had a daughter that passed away. Now, Amalei Rabban Le'ula, through the rabbis, said to Ula, Kum Nezel Ninachme, come, let us go and comfort and console Reb Shmuel by Yehuda on the loss of his daughter. So Amalehu, Ula said to the other rabbis, he said, My isli gabin achamta de bavloi. What do I have to do with the consolation of the Babylonians? The gedufahu, which is it's blasphemy towards Hashem. Why? Because the army, the Babylonians, when they come to console a mourner, they say, "My efshalim evad, what could you have done? What could we have done?" Which the inference would sound like, "Ho efshalim evad avdi." But if they could do something, they would do. What does that mean? This is what Hashem decided. Rather, Azlahu l'chudai gabe. Ula went himself to Rav Shmuel by Yehuda. He didn't want to go with the Babylonians, who he considered their nechama as blasphemy. So Amalei, he said to him a pasuk in Devarim. He quoted him, "Vayomer Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Vayomer Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, Al tatzer ez Moav v'atiske b'melchama. Do not provoke the people of Moav, and v'atiske b'melchama, don't start up a war with them." Now, on that, the question is, he said, So Ula, in his interpretation of this pasuk, said, why would Moshe have entertained to create a war without Hashem's permission? Why is Hashem warning him, don't start up, don't make a war with the people of Moab? Well, if Hashem didn't command him, why should Moshe make his own war? So explained Ula, Moshe had made his own kavachemer to himself, and that's what Hashem was forewarning. Amar, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Uma Midyanim, if the people of Midyan, Shlei Bo El Lazar as Moav, who only came to assist the people of Moav in fighting the Jewish people. Amr Torah, still the Torah tells, punishment in Pasuk Mamidbar, Tzara Esa Midyanim Bikis Moisam, you should provoke the people of Midyan, you should smite them, you should punish them for their assisting in the people of Moav in fighting the Jewish people. So therefore Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, as we continue to Talmud Beis, so Moavim Atzmim, so the people of Moavim themselves, who they started all the bad for the Jewish people. They hired Bilam to go ahead and curse the Jewish people. Loi Koshkin, isn't it a Kavachimah? Wouldn't it make sense for sure that we should provoke them and fight with them? If Midian, who was only helping Hashem set to fight, so the people of Moav who started the whole thing for sure, on that Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what Hashem was telling to Moshe Rabbeinu. Not the way you're thinking is the way it entered my thought. Because Hashem says, "Shtei prey des tayvais, two good birds, yeshli lahitzman, I have to take out of the people of Ammon and Moav. Rus ha-Moaviyah, v'nama ha-Moinus, two female converts, that of Rus from the people of Moav, and Nama from the people of Ammon." And therefore, Hashem had told Moshe Rabbeinu, do not provoke, do not fight a war against the people of Moav. Now, says Ula to console now. He says, "Valei dvar mekavuchemet." Says, and now it's for sure kavuchemet even further. Uma bishvil shtei prey des tayvais is if regards two good birds, meaning just for two female converts. Chasa kadosh baruch hu al beis umayis gedolos v'lechriven. So Hashem had mercy on two huge nations and didn't destroy them just for two people that would come out of them later on in generations that would enter the Jewish people. So said Ula, Bito shel Rabbi. So the daughter of my master, im kisherihi, if she was upstanding, v'ru'uyihi lotzis mimenu davar tov, and it was fit for to come out of her something good, meaning upstanding children, alachas kama v'kama dehavachaya, all the more so for sure she would have lived. And if she died young and she doesn't have children, therefore it must be that she fulfilled every potential that she has inside of her. There wasn't anything more that could have came out of her, because if it would have been, then Hashem would have had her survive and have children, because Ammon and Moav, two huge nations that deserve to be punished, and still Hashem said don't start up with them because of just two people that would come from each one of these nations. Now continuing on the related discussion of the Ammon and Moav, so Amr Bechir Bar Abba Amr B'yechanan says, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekaper Schal Kol Beria. Kodesh Baruch Hu does not hold back the reward of any creature, of any single person, no matter how small that act is. And that is a filaschar sichana, even the reward just for appropriate speech. As he explains, the Ilu, the Bechira de Ka'amr Mayav, we had these two daughters of Light who thought that the whole world had ended, and they went and they consorted with their father to have children from him. Now, the older daughter, when she fathered a child, she said Mayav. She called him Mayav, which is an inappropriate type of a terminology, which connotes Mayaviha, Mayavi, from my father, that's where the child is from. So, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, regarding the people of Mayav, Hashem said to Moshe, the pasuk in the Devarim that we quoted, Al tatzer ez Mayav, do not provoke Mayav, v'al tiske b'melchama, and don't start up with them a war. Now, the inference is, melchama hu delay, just don't fight a war with them. Ha'angaria avid behu. but to have them work for you, to make them bring water and food and to work them, that you're allowed to do. Where it's Ira de Ka'amra ben Ami, but the younger daughter who when she had a child from her father. So then she called him ben Ami, the son of my nation, which is an ambiguous, vague term, which is referring to our father, but it's not specifying clearly. Amla Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, regarding those people coming out of ben Ami, Hashem said to Moshe, V'kerafta mul b'nei Ammon, that you should face yourself towards the sons of Ammon, of that people. Atetzurim, do not provoke them, v'atiskerbam, and don't start up with them, meaning klal at all, which is the afila angari leitavabahu, that even just to levy some taxes, just to have them work for you, even that you're not allowed to do, and that's just for the reward of that one good word of how she named her son, a little bit less pretzistic, a little less provocative, by calling it more vague term, not may of, from my father. For that, she was rewarded that her children should not even be provoked at all from the Jewish people. Another teaching from Amr B'chir B'Abba Amr B'shubin, now from Amr B'shubin Karcha, which again continues on this from people of Avin Amayev, says, "La'olam yakdim adam l'dvar mitzvah." A person should always be the first one to fulfill a mitzvah thing. Whereas Tosfos points out that the daughters of Lot had their intentions when they had relations with their father was for mitzvah purposes, as the Gemara explains, "Pesachus Nazdav Chav Gimel Min Aleph." Now, so where do you see that a person should always be the first one? Because of one night that the older daughter had relations with her father than the younger one, she prefaced her younger sister in having four generations in the Jewish people, which coming out of the older daughter, which was from Mayav, from Rus, was Ovid, Yishai, V'David Ushlaima, which came out of her, the Davidic dynasty. She had those four generations. Now, V'ilu Tzi'ira Adrachavam, but the younger daughter, who from Amin, she only had her descendant enter the Jewish people until the son of Shlomo, which was Rechavim. The Chassid says the pasuk Melachim Aleph says V'shem Imay Nama Ha'Amoinis, that the name of his mother of Rechavim, which was the wife of Shlomo, was Nama Ha'Amoinis from the people of Amin, and that was only because she came one night later that she had to wait four generations to have someone enter into the Jewish people. Now the Gemara resumes discussing the halacha of our Mishnah regarding a share of Yisrael and the share of a Nachri. Now related, the Gemara says, "Turn Rabban Lina Braisa. Share shall Yisrael shenugach share shall Kuti. If the ox of a Jew gores the ox of a Kuti, of the Kuthians, so pater, so then the Jewish person, his ox, he's going to be exempt." Which later on the Gemara is going to explain the reason for this, is it's actually a penalty that the sages implemented that the Jewish people should not become intermarried with the daughters of the Kutim, to show that although that they are Jewish, but since they don't have the same halachas, allegiance to the Torah as the Jewish people, so they institute a penalty to show that there's a discrepancy between who Kutim are and regular full-fledged Jews are. But it was enough to make this penalty just that when the Jew gores his ox, he's exempt. But they didn't make the penalty so far to say that when the Kuti gores the Jewish person, that'll have to pay like the non-Jew to pay even by the Tam Nezek Shalom, rather Bishal Kuti Shenogach Sher Shel Yisrael. However, when the Kuti gores the ox of a Jew, so then it's like a regular Jew, which is Tam Mishalom Chatzin Nezek. The Tam pays half the damage, Umud Mishalom Nezek Shalom, and the Mud pays Nezek Shalom. So regarding that way, it's the same. But the Jew goring the Kuti, there the Rabbanan instituted some type of a penalty that the Kutim are not the same as Jews, and therefore you're going to be exempt when you gore the ox of a Kuti. Which Rav Meir, I mean, he says, Shershal Yisrael Shonogach Shershal Kuti is Potter, as the first opinion said, that the Jew who gores the Kuti's ox is exempt. Veshal Kuti Shonogach Shershal Yisrael, says Rav Meir, but when the Kuti gores the Jew's ox, Bein Tam Bein Muid Misham Nezek Shalom. Then whether it's even a Tam or a Muid, it's always going to pay Nezek Shalom, which Rav Meir seemingly considers the Kuti like a Nachri, like a non-Jew, which we explained in the Halacha and the Mishnah, that the non-Jew that gores the Jew, Hefkirin Meminen, they always have to pay Nezek Shalom. Now that the Gemara asks, Lamemra, is that to say the Sabra Meir, the Meir holds, Kutim Geri Arayasein, that the Kutim were not really full-fledged converts, they're really like non-Jews. They only converted, so to speak, because of the fear of the lions, which is brought in the Sefer Malachim Beis, Perikid Zayin, that explains over there, Vayashalach Hashem Bahem Es Ha'arayis, that Hashem sent the lions, which over there it's referring to the Kutim that the king of Asher had brought, because after he exiled the 10 tribes from that area of Eretz Yisrael, so he wanted to fill it up. He brought in Kutim, which are non-Jews from the place of Kuta. So those people were really non-Jews. But after the lions were pouncing on them, they were afraid, they converted. So there's a discussion in the Talmud, in the Gemara many times, were they real converts, were they not? What's exactly their halacha? So it seems like, in this halacha, the Rameh holds that the Kutim were really like Nachrim, they're really non-Jews, and that's why they have to pay Nezek Shalom when they gore the ox of a Jew. And so although they converted, it was just because of the fear of the lions, but they never really, it wasn't a sincere conversion, and therefore not halachic at all. Now that the Gemara asks, is that really so, that that's Rameh holds the Kutim were not really converts? But for Amini, however, there seems to be contradictory from Mishnah Masechtas Nida. The Mishnah there says, Kalak Saman, all the garments that have a blood stain on it, which is seemingly from the menstrual blood of a woman, haboi mi rekim, that if such a stained garment comes from this place called rekim, so tahayim, so those garments are going to be considered tahar. They're going to be pure. Now, the reason being is because the rekim is a city where the majority of the inhabitants are non-Jews. Now, the blood of a non-Jew, even from the menstrual blood, is tahar biblically, because the pasuk of Yikra Yud Bey says Dabar el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Isha Kisa Zriya V'yolda, a woman that will conceive and have a child, where it talks about the halachas of Dam Nida, of a Dam of Yeledis, where it's only for a Bas Yisrael that she transmits Tumah for the blood that comes out but when she gives birth and when she's menstruating, but not a non-Jewish woman. Now, as Rashi points out, although the rabbis did decree rabbinically that even a non-Jewish woman should have the halacha as a zava, which means to say that her blood should transmit tumah, but however, regarding their stained garments, the rabbanan did not make that gezer, because the reason is, even the kesem, even the blood-stained garments of a Jewish woman, is only rabbinic halacha, because biblically the Torah says, dam yezeva bibsara, that the blood that flows on her flesh, in other words, it only transmits tumah when you see it flowing from her body, not which you find on her garment. Now, actually, even the blood that you see from her body, the Gemara says in Masechtas Nidah Daf Lamed Aleph, that the Rabbanan did not decree that the blood of a nachris, of a non-Jewish woman, should be tumah, although that we said that she'll be considered zava, that's only when it's still moist. Because as the Mishnah there teaches, the blood of a nachris, Beishameh says, is tar. Beisil says it has the halacha like her spittle and like her urine, which is that it transmits tumah when it's moist and not when it's dry. So therefore, although halachically a kesem transmits tumah because it's the dam nida, however, that's only rabbinically, and that halacha rabbinically only applies to the blood of the Jewish women, not to the blood of a non-Jewish woman. And since in Rekim the majority of the people are non-Jewish, so therefore that type of kesem, that stained garment that comes from there, is going to be considered tahar. Now, Rabbi Yehuda mitameh, he actually says that no, the ksamim that come from Rekim are tameh, and the reason he says them they shehein, because actually the majority of the people of Rekim are not non-Jews. They're actually geirim. They actually were converts. And therefore, their blood is tameh, like a regular Jewish woman. It's just that betayim. It's just that they erred, and they accustom themselves. They act as if they're like the non-Jews. But the truth is that they're Yisrael Mumarim. They're rebellious Jews. They're really Jewish. They're just not acting Jewish. So therefore, they are dam nida from Yisraelis. And that's why he says it's going to be tameh. That's regarding Rekim. Now, says the Mishnah, Mibein HaNachrim Tarim, the blood that comes from non-Jews are tar, as we said, that even rabbinically there's no halacha of kesem regarding the blood-stained garments of non-Jewish women. Now, Mibein Yisrael u'mibein HaKutim, now regarding the ksam that come from the Jewish people and from the Kutim, so Remeir Mitameh, he says that's going to be Tameh. V'chacham Mitarim, however, the sages say it's going to be tar. And the reason is, Shalei Nech Shadu Al-Kismayin, because they're not suspect regarding their ksamim, their blood-stained garments. Now Rashi points out that Masechtas Nidah Daf Nunvav Amud Beis, the Gemara there asks that if the Chacham are saying that it's tahar from when it comes from Jewish people and from Kutim, so then where do you ever find Allah of ksam being tameh if they're holding everyone's kesem as tahar? So the Gemara there actually answers and explains that it's a little bit different than how the literal reading sounds like. That when it comes Mibein Yisrael u'mibein akutim. Actually, when a kesem comes from amongst the Jewish people or from the kutim, it actually is going to be tamei. Now, when the Chacham is saying that it's going to be tar, meaning when you find it in a Jewish city, in a makam hefker, out in the open, that's when it's going to be tar. Why? Isn't it from a Jewish woman? No, it's not from a Jewish woman. And that's the words that the Chacham are saying, which we just quoted over here, that they're not suspect regarding their blood-stained garments to be mafkrit, to throw it out in the open. Because they conceal it and they put it in a private place that it shouldn't transmit tumah to somebody that's tahar. So if you find it out in the open, even in the Jewish city, you could know that it's not from a Jewish woman. It must be from a non-Jewish woman, and that's why it's tahar. Now, regarding the ksum that are found amongst the kutim, that's the machlekes Remeir and the Chacham. Remeir says that it's going to be tameh, because they are suspect regarding their ksumim, that they would leave it out in the open place. Whereas the Chacham say that's going to be tar, because they also, like the Jewish women, are not suspect regarding their ksumim to just be mafkrit, to throw it out into the street. Rather, they conceal it until they could wash the garment. They don't throw out their bloodied garments out into the street. But one thing the Gemara says, Amma, but we see that from the fact that Meir says that the dam of kutim are going to be tamei, so obviously ksav Meir, so obviously Meir holds, kutim geri emesei, must be that he holds kutim are considered true converts. And that's why they're considered like Jewish women, although they don't act totally like the Jewish people, but they really are Jewish because they converted, and all their descendants too. If that's the case, that's why he says that, oh, if it's Mibein Yisrael, Mibein HaKutim, Mibein is Mitame. Now, so then how do we understand the halacha that was just said before, where seemingly Remeir treats the Kutim like Nachrim, like non-Jews? And that's why he says that when the Yisrael gores the Nachri, so he's exempt, totally. Nachri gores the Yisrael, and so to Remeir says the same halacha for Kuti, is going to be Chayim Nezik Shalom, even by Tam, but he holds that they're real converts, not like Nachrim. So Amar Bavo says you're right. As we prove in the Mishnah Masechet Tznit, that he holds that they are converts, they're really like Jewish people, but Knastu Trekonis Remeir B'mamayinim. Remeir went and penalized the money of the Kutim, Shaloy Tamo B'hem, that they shouldn't get mixed in with the Jewish people and intermarry. So although they really are Jewish, but they don't act like regular Jewish people. So to stop them from being married to the Jewish people that are full-fledged Jews, that Remeir penalized more than the Tanakama. Tanakama held that it was enough to prevent intermarriage from having the Jewish ox, when it gores the Kuti's ox, to be exempt. But when the Kuti gores the Jew, so that's like a regular Jew, because that's what he really is. It's Chatzin Nezik by Tam and Nezik Shalom by Mu'ud. But Remeir went a step further. You're right, he really is a Geri Emes. But he took it a step further to show that they're really different and that they shouldn't intermarry. Even when the Kuti gores the Yisrael, they penalize the money, which the rabbis had permission to do that, to say even the Tam is going to have to pay Nezik Shalom. Now, however, on this interpretation of Rebbe Avo, which we just answered, Masa Reb Zera asked on Rebbe Avo from the following Mishnah Masechtas Ksubas. The Mishnah says, Ve'elo Nairi Sheshlam Knas. And these are the following Nairis, a girl between 12 and 12 and a half, that when she was violated, when she was raped by a man, that they're going to get a knas. Meaning, which the Gemara there explains, meaning even though these are women that it's forbidden for the Jewish man to marry, but still they're going to get the knas. Habal, a mamzeres, of a man is ma'anis, a mamzeres, which is a woman that has from parents that were forbidden to marry based on the pain of karis, val nasino, or a woman from the people of the Givainim, which was a people that converted to Judaism, balakutis, and on a kutis. Now that asks Reb Zera on Reb Avo, v'isa g'daydech. Now if you're going to entertain, like Reb Avo just said, that kanes Remeir b'mamayinim, that Remeir, yes, as we explained, holds the kutim are like Jewish people. But he penalized their money so that there shouldn't be intermarried with the full-fledged Jews, that their money are penalized. They don't get, when a Jewish person gores them, they don't get money. When they gore a Jewish person, they have to pay like a non-Jew. So if the rabbis penalize the monies of the kutim, so hachanami niknois, so here also by the halacha of ma'anis, of rape, they should also penalize the kutim. So if a Jewish man is ma'anis or kutis, they should be exempt. The Jewish man should be exempt. Kadesh le tam abahen, because we penalize their money, their rights that a regular Jewish woman would have when she's nenas, that we said that we penalize their money so they shouldn't intermarry. So why does the Mishnah then say in Masechet Ksubos that they do get the knas? So Abaya says, you're right. Normally that we would say that regarding monetary law, we are mafka their mammon, we don't want them to have the full Jewish rights so that they don't intermarry. But here it's different. The reason is, today, as we continue our Tabo Lama Tesla, we don't want a sinner to gain. What, a man is going to rape a woman, a kutis, and he's going to be scot-free? We don't want him to gain, and that's why, you're right, normally we wouldn't let them get monies that Jewish women get, but here we want them to get it so that the sinner doesn't gain. Now, that the Gemara asks, what do you mean? You could have both. You could have that the sinner shouldn't gain, and that the kutim's money should be penalized, because when they sell aniyim. So give it to the poor people. Let him have to pay the 50 salam he has to give normally to the woman that he raped, instead of to the kutis, give it to poor people. So then I'm Rabbi Murray. Murray says, no mishum to have a mamish in loitayvim, because ultimately it would be money that it doesn't have any claimants. In other words, if you're going to say that he should have to give it to a poor person, so who's going to take him to court? If a poor person is going to come to the rapist and say, hey, give me the 50 slum that you have to give to the woman that the rabbi said you don't give to the kutim, give it to me, he's going to tell him, no, I want to give it to another poor person. Who are you to claim it to me? I can give it to another one, and therefore no one's going to be able to pin him down. And because of that, that's why we said that even Habal Kutis, he has to give her the monies of the einis. Again, because although kutim we normally don't, but because of Shalei Chaitinisker, that's why they instituted that there, the halacha would be that a ma'anis has to give the money to the kutis that is ma'anis.